Chapter 4. Travelling in sustained bursts from the jump packs, Caeligus had led his battle brothers on a wide sweep. They were the squad furthest out from the base, sent dozens of kilometres to the east of Reclamation. Reaching the reconnaissance point assigned, learning the details of the landscape, but finding no enemy, Caeligus pushed north as hard as he could. He didn't expect to intercept the orcs. He assumed that they would turn in towards Reclamation at the first opportunity. He was frustrated by the position Krivan had designated for his squad. His hope was to catch sight of the orcs during one of the jumps. He accepted that he would not be among the first to engage, but he wanted his knowledge of the greenskin's position to be first-hand. It was a point of pride, not of necessity. He admitted this to himself. Though he said nothing to the others, their grim drive told him they felt the same. The engagement against the orcs at the Reclamation Bridge had been unsatisfying. It had felt too much like what it was, fighting in defence of the Eldar. Now, though, the true war of extermination could begin. He saw a light to the north. It was an intermittent glow.
"That can't be them," Varnis said. "Why would the greenskins travel that far out of their road?"
"That isn't sunrise," Caeligus said, "and it isn't natural. So it's either the orcs or the Eldar." The squad had already travelled much further than Caeligus had anticipated. The glow was more distant yet. It made no sense that the orcs had headed in that direction. "It therefore makes perfect sense, given these orcs," he thought. Even if he was wrong, ignoring this event would be a mistake. "Orcs or Eldar, I see enemy activity." "That is our destination," he said.
"Should we report in?"
Havran asked.
"When we have something definite to report," Caeligus told him.
Unlikely as it seemed, if the lights were the result of a freak planetary feature, he would risk deviating the war effort from its proper course. He would also risk humiliation. They arced towards the light. With each flight, the glow sharpened. Caeligus began to distinguish individual beams. He could hear the sound of engines. Then they picked up the tracks of the orc passage. The terrain was chewed up in a swath, but not a wide one. The main body of the orc army had not come this way. Caeligus swallowed his rage. A portion of the enemy was ahead. The activity had to be investigated. The squad was still several minutes away from the orc position when a formation of Eldar jet bikes flew towards the lights. Caeligus cursed. A few leaps away, the scene ahead began to take form. It was no less confusing. There was a building that looked like a crude hangar. It was huge. It had been covered with earth, camouflaging it from any distant onlookers. A large party of orcs surrounded it, their guns facing out. The Eldar were conducting hit-and-run attacks. The greenskins were laying down forbidding barrages of shells and bullets, but they had no tanks. One jet bike burned. The orc casualties were mounting quickly, though they had the resources to hold out for some time yet. The squad came within range. Caeligus called a halt on a small hill just beyond the range of the orcs' rifles. The brutes hadn't noticed them yet. They were focused on the Eldar. The sounds of industry came from inside the hangar. There was also a heavy, continuous beating roar. An engine? Caeligus wondered. If so, it was colossal. The sky was shifting from black to grey. In the growing light, Caeligus realized just how blasted the land here was. The orcs had been on Lepidus longer than anyone had thought, long enough to have built this hangar. Caeligus thought, at first, that this was the point to which the greenskins had been teleporting their battle wagons from the moon. Then he realized that in that case there would have been no reason for them to attack reclamation from the west. This was something else. Perhaps originally intended to provide reinforcements, thereby trapping the city in a pincer assault.
"The orcs are looking outward," he said. "We will use that distraction."
He pointed. "We land before the doors. We will destroy what the greenskins wish to protect." They made the jump. They came down hard, bolters already firing. The orcs nearest the hangar doors died without knowing what was striking them. The next ones spun in confusion. Half of Squad Kyligus tore into them, spreading an arc of death outward from the building. The orcs' fire lost all coherence as they tried to respond to Eldar and Space Marines at the same time. While Havran and his brothers waded into the enemy, Kyligus and the others provided cover for Varnis as he set demolition charges on the doors. On the other side of the iron wall, the rumble and whine of the enormous engine intensified. The sound felt loud enough to shatter bone. The details of the cacophony were hard to sort. Even so, Kyligus realized something had changed. The sounds of construction had ceased. They were replaced by a rhythm. It was slow at first, the heartbeat of a huge machine. Within seconds, it accelerated. It was easily recognizable. It was also impossible. It was too big. Varnis turned his head to look back at Kyligus.
"Brother Sergeant," he began.
He knew. They all did.
"Move!"
Kyligus roared. The locomotive smashed through the hangar doors. The iron barrier disintegrated. Metal shards flew like sleet. Varnis was smashed against the front. It bore the shape of immense clamped jaws, and the machine leapt forward with such speed that the impact held the Raven Guard's body against the lower fangs for a few seconds before he fell. Treads 10 meters long crushed him, hundreds of tons of mass smashing ceramite like an eggshell, smearing his gen-hanced flesh across the ground. Kyligus used an emergency burst from his jump pack to hurl himself up, back and to the side. So did the rest of the squad. Reflexes and speed were not enough. 3 others were knocked down by the juggernaut's charge. Brother Syok rose above the height of the cab, only to come into the line of fire of the enormous gun mounted on the rear car. It fired. Syok vanished. The shell lit up the dawn with a streak of flame. When it reached the ground, kilometers ahead, it struck with the force of a meteor. The side of the engine clipped Kyligus. It knocked his flight out of true, and he slammed into the ground at a steep angle. He launched himself back into the air immediately, shaking off the stun in mid-flight. He landed 50 meters away, then turned to fight the new enemy. The land train was a colossus. The locomotive alone was several times larger than the battle wagons. It pulled 4 cars that were almost as huge. The lower half of each appeared to be troop compartments. The top half held turrets and rocket pods. Engine and cars bristled with so many guns they looked like clusters of spines on a living animal. Running on treads constructed of metal so thick that it seemed the cars were solid all the way through, the train should have advanced at a tectonic crawl. But its engine was so overpowered that the monster tore up the earth with the eagerness of a hunting saurian. The orcs on the ground shouted their joy as their great machine was unleashed. Many of them did not move from its path in time. They were pulped in their turn. The celebration only grew more frenzied. The train's sudden emergence placed it in the path of 2 of the Eldar jet bikes. Their drivers tried to evade. They veered hard to the left and the right. They might as well have tried to avoid a moving mountain chain. The Saimhan worship of speed turned them into burnt offerings.
the skimmers became fireballs as they collided with the monster. On top of the locomotive, towards the front, was the clear blister of a canopy. In it, a single orc surveyed its works and exulted.
"Raven Guard," Kyligus called over the vox, "strike the engineer."
As he began his descent, he opened the company channel.
"The orcs have a land train," he warned, "north-northeast of reclamation."
He fired a long burst of shells at the canopy.
"The Eldar,"
he began, but trailed off when he saw the look on the orc's face. The brute was a big specimen, bent over by a giant flashing collection of coils on its back. It looked up at the Raven Guard assault squad coming at it from all angles. Still 20 meters out, Kyligus could see the monster grinning, laughing. The bolter shells left the canopy untouched. 1 second too late, Kyligus realized that they weren't even hitting it. There was a strange shimmer about the train. The shells were striking a force field. Then every gun on the train fired simultaneously. A curtain of projectiles cut through the squad. The bullet streams were unending. They defeated Ceramite, battered and bled the Space Marines into bloody meat. The cannon fired again. All the cannons did. The train was surrounded by a storm of blasts. The fire faded. So did Kyligus's retinal display. Havran was the last of his brothers to die. Kyligus saw him topple from the roof of the locomotive, both arms and his left leg shot away. Kyligus clung to the lower fangs of the engine's battering ram. There were large holes in his power armor. His jump pack was leaking promethium. If he tried to use it, he would immolate himself. Though he had lost his display, he knew he was suffering from massive internal bleeding. He would rip the laughter from that orc's throat. Strength fading, he tightened his grip on the iron fang and hauled himself upwards. He grabbed the upper teeth, found a foothold on the lower ones. Above that, there was a smooth expanse of metal. He paused, looking for any means to climb higher. The jaws parted. He lost his grip and fell forward. His chest hit the mouth of a stubby cannon almost as wide as the one on the rear car. He threw himself backwards as the gun roared. The shell did not hit him directly, so he lived long enough to know what was happening to him. The damage was so great that it was beyond pain. His body was enveloped by a cold nothing. He flew in a broken cartwheel and landed a short distance ahead of the locomotive. He tried to rise. His body did not respond. He couldn't even blink. He lay on his back, his head twisted to the side. In the burning dawn, he watched the train rush towards him. Its shadow passed over him, returning him to night. Then came the treads. And then, at the very end, there was room for more pain. Behrazi heard Kyligus's final vox transmission. Then, as if summoned by the dawn, the rest of the orc army appeared over the north horizon. A few moments before, there had been silence. The cacophony of engines and war cries did not approach, it erupted.
"How did we not hear them before?" Brother Ram asked.
Squad Behrazi was on one of the few roads of Lepidus. It circled the hill of reclamation in a wide ellipse, about 5 kilometers from its base to the north and south, twice that east and west. On the east side, it embraced most of the colony's cultivated land. The Raven Guard were midway between the point where the road turned south and the branch that led to the city's east side.
The terrain consisted of gentle hills. Further to the east was a web of deep gullies. The road was the easiest, most likely route for the orcs to take. The surprise had been in the enemy's absence until now.
"They were waiting for the signal," Behrazi said. The strategy was simple. It was effective. And it was another lesson in the danger of underestimating the orcs.
"The army and the land train will reach reclamation at the same time."
Krevan's voice came over the vox. He was speaking to the entire company, demanding news of Caeligus.
Behrazi said, "We've lost all contact. I have eyes on the orc army. All forces converge on Squad Behrazi's location," Krevan ordered. After a moment, he added, "I will send you word about the Eldar disposition shortly. Will they be joining us? It would be in their best interests to do so."
The comment could be taken a number of ways. Behrazi assumed that Krevan meant them all. He watched the rising clouds of dust and smoke that marked the orc approach.
"The greenskins will be here before reinforcements arrive," he said. "Slow them down," Krevan said. "We must keep the two forces apart. Together, they will raise everything. We have a chance of defeating the separated foes."
"Well," Behrazi said to his battle brothers when the shadow captain had signed off, "shall we demonstrate how a single squad can stop an army in its tracks?"
A few hundred meters further on, the road passed between two rises. It was as close to a choke point as they would find.
"This is where we stop them," Behrazi said.
"Will we?" Ram asked.
"I didn't say permanently, but long enough."
Half the squad began laying mines. Behrazi took the other half forward. The single ambush would not be enough. Every impediment they could throw in the orcs' way would make a difference. Each moment that the orcs had to struggle to advance was a moment that brought the rest of 8th Company closer to the engagement and interfered with the timing of the orcs' assault. The Raven Guard advanced on foot at a run. They eschewed the use of the jump packs. They needed invisibility more than speed. Behrazi and Ram pounded along the west side of the road while the other three took the east. They would have time, Behrazi estimated, to cover perhaps a kilometer before they met the leading elements of the orcs. That would be enough. Going north, the hills became even lower. They were gradual swells giving way to prairie. There were no trees. The grass was less than calf height. Day had come, and the sky was overcast. If Behrazi looked away from the approaching horde, if he blocked out the sound of savagery and war, he saw a mirage of peace. Other than reclamation and its immediate surroundings, Lepidus was untouched. The roads, like the bridge, pre-existed human colonization. They were almost completely unused by the colonists. The millennia had eroded them, just as they had toppled the city that had once stood in Reclamation's place. Though the edges were ragged with creeping growth, and there were cleavages where the ground had shifted in important ways, for the most part, the pavement ran straight and smooth. Behrazi did not recognize the materials of the road's construction, though he now had a very good guess as to their origin. Other than the roads and the city, the planet was a blank slate, a garden that tended to itself, waiting to be of use. Lepidus was, he knew, beautiful. He did not feel it to be beautiful. He experienced it as an arena of war. The peace of the landscape would vanish, ground to muck by the machines of slaughter. And this bucolic gentleness was an irritant in its lack of cover. An irritant, not an enemy. The land was open and the light was bright. There were still shadows. Wherever the foe was not omniscient, the wraith slip was possible, and the orcs were far from omniscient. Now the enemy was less than a kilometer away. The Raven Guard kept moving forward, but at a diagonal away from the road. The orcs were in full flight. They were charging straight ahead, hungry for their appointment with battle. They were not interested in what was happening on the sides, in movements that were visible only in the corners of their eyes. One by one, the warriors of Squad Behrasi went to ground. At staggered intervals, the Space Marines lay prone, shadows in the grass, bolter sights set on the road. Behrasi was the closest to the enemy. He took up his position with barely 100 meters to go before the greenskins arrived. The war bikes came first. Their drivers leaned forward in their seats, jaws wide as they drank in the exhilaration of speed. They snarled at each other as they raced to be the first to arrive at the celebration of violence. They were within arm's reach of each other. Behrasi opened fire. He blew the head off the leading orc. Its bike turned into the path of others as it tumbled down the road, spreading metal and flame. The next orc in line turned too hard and lost control. The bike flipped, catapulting the driver with such force that the brute left a meters-long spread of skin and blood when it hit the pavement. As at the gorge, a chain reaction built up. Laughter at the misfortune of rivals turned into screams as the bikes piled into each other. A burning mass of jagged metal screeched along the pavement and stopped. Behind it, drivers of other war bikes managed to slow down enough to veer off the road. There was no cliff to finish them off here. Some rode past the flames and then were back on the road, roaring back to full speed. But others hit the wrong bit of unevenness of terrain. At those speeds, that was enough to send more bikes to the ground, their drivers catapulted into the air. Some of the orcs survived their falls. The army's advance began to stumble. No orcs had survived the massacre at the gorge. The rest of the army had not known there was a lesson to learn. With grim amusement, Behrasi watched history repeat itself for the first minute of the ambush. But the terrain was wider here. The orcs had room to maneuver, and the force was so much larger. It was too big to be stopped. The rest of the bikes found their way around the obstacle. So did the buggies. The battle wagons came up the middle and drove straight through the wreckage, scattering it to either side. The infantry followed. To the south, more bikes went down, and then Ram took out the driver of one of the buggies. It slewed violently. Instead of trying to regain control, its gunner opened fire. Bullets raked across more of its kin than the landscape. A tank disciplined the gunner by putting a shell into the buggy before the vehicle could crash. More drivers died, more vehicles collided with each other, and the tangle grew worse. Less than a minute had elapsed. Behrasi rose from his position and headed south. He ran parallel with the orcs. They paid even less attention to the sides. All eyes were on the fire and riot ahead. The horde slowed again, bunched up and spread out. The orcs were close to overrunning the Raven Guard positions without even knowing it. Behrasi pulled further back. He wanted a few more strategic kills before he was dragged into the mire of the fight for survival. He was level with one of the tanks. It had a double turret, a smaller cannon placed above a larger one, each rotating independently. Its gunners were riding in the open. The hatches were open. The target was ideal. The opportunity was there. He looked ahead. The wreckage was being cleared again. There was only a few 100 meters before the orcs reached the choke point.
Brother Gira, wait for the first tank. The rest of you, join in the attack when it begins. Use of jump packs authorized.
He looked back at his battle wagon.
Now, he thought, you have my full attention.
Still running, he shot the gunners. As the orcs behind the tank turned in his direction, he used his jump pack to propel himself at the vehicle. He landed on the top turret. An orc popped out of its hatch. He impaled its throat with his lightning claws and hauled the gurgling green skin out with one arm. He tossed the orc over the side. It was trampled by its fellows. Behrasi dropped frag and crack grenades down the hatch. Then he shot away from the battle wagon on full burst from the pack. Below, the tank halted after the first muffled explosion. Both cannons aimed his way. Smoke was billowing from the hatches, but the greenskins were still determined to fire. The guns boomed. The shells shrieked past Behrasi at the same moment as the battle wagon blew up. He came down at the choke point. The mines had torn the treads out from the leading tank. The orcs were still trying to drive it. It lurched forward in jerks, spraying sparks as its metal wheels dug at the pavement. Two other buggies were upended and burning. Infantry was pouring into the space between the hills. Gira and Pazur were on the battle wagon, fighting a dozen orcs on the roof. Behrasi fired at the orcs climbing up the sides of the tank. So did the other four members of the squad as they arrived. They bought Pazur enough time to haul open the hatch. He turned, aimed his flamer down, and incinerated the interior. The battle wagon stopped moving, a hulk of dead iron in the middle of the road. Squad Behrasi kept shooting, piling up the bodies. The orcs kept coming, faster and stronger. Gira was in the clear, but before Pazur could leap from the tank, two massive orcs surged from the crowd, faster and with more agility than should have been possible with their armor. They attacked Pazur from both sides, one with a chain axe, the other with a power claw. The blows were the crack of thunder. Pazur fell to his knees. One orc jammed the chain axe into his gorget, grinding through until Pazur's head hung down his left shoulder. The other green skin, unwilling to be left out of the kill, slammed its claw against his back. Its aim was off, and it burst the flamer tanks. Howling, coated in liquid fire, the orcs jumped from the battle wagon, spreading flame in the horde below. The tide rose up both sides of the choke point. Two more tanks were coming up behind. The Raven Guard had created a dam, but Behrasi knew it was about to burst. How long had they held the orcs back? The battle had lasted a few minutes. It was almost over. The squad regrouped. The Space Marines formed a line across the road. They walked backwards, away from the wreck of the battle wagon, and poured bolter shells into the horde. They killed orcs by the score. Orcs by the hundreds replaced them. The retaliatory fire became more organized, more concentrated, more lethal.
"Brothers," Behrasi voxed to the company, "I hope you are close. We have held the enemy back for as long as we can."
"We're almost with you," Sergeant Clijun responded.
"I see them," Gira said.
Behrasi risked a glance backwards. He saw the streaks of seven more assault squads closing in. At the same moment that he saw the hope of reinforcements, he heard the train. Heavy, thudding, sending the vibrations of its might spreading through the ground for thousands of meters in all directions, the orcish madness for speed and strength given material form appeared in the east.
"Too soon," Behrasi thought. "Too fast."
The train's horn blasted across the land. Violence itself had a voice. And it rejoiced.